We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He is Anthony Pusick. How was your weekend, Anthony?
It was a good weekend, Don. It was hockeyless yesterday.
Yeah,
which was disappointing. But the reason that it is that way is because we don't have three Game 7s. We have one, and you nailed it. You said that you thought that the most likely Game 7 out of the three that were left come Friday was going to be the Vancouver series, and you were right.
And it just makes sense. Edmonton holds serve at home, survived, giving up the, they had the lead and they gave it up quickly, but then they were just a better team the rest of the way, and they win that game. And now you get ready for Game 7, and it looks like Vancouver's going to play without Brock Besser with a blood clot, and that's not nothing. He has been tremendous for the Vancouver Canucks, single-handedly winning games for them. He's got 12 points. He has 7 goals. He has been a terrific player, and without him, that's a major, major loss. So we were looking at all four division winners advancing to the conference final, even though Vancouver's home, advantage Edmonton going into this game tonight with a chance to advance to the conference final for the second time in 3 years for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, of course, all the best to Besser. I mean, we've seen blood clots now with Freddie Anderson and a couple other guys, too. Obviously, scary situation. But they say it doesn't seem to be a situation where his life is threatened, which is great news. I believe I saw a report that he won't play for the rest of the year. It doesn't look like he is going to be a part of whatever run they have left. And now you don't have Demko, you don't have your top goal scorer, and there are times in this series, Don, where it's looked hard for Vancouver to score, which is kind of confusing to me. I would have thought that they had the advantage, especially with the fact that even though they're on their third goalie, It seemed like a deeper team in Vancouver would find a way to get goals past Calvin Pickard, but that hasn't happened with any type of consistency. I mean, look, Vancouver's home. I believe Edmonton's favored. That tells you all you need to know, and they have the top talent to do it. Look, I picked for me to get my bracket correct, at least through the final four. I need Edmonton to win this series. So I would like Edmonton to win, just to say that I was right. But if I had to pick, I would say that I'm not going to count out Vancouver just yet. I know that it's an uphill battle because they have more injuries than Edmonton, but Vancouver's answered the bell almost every game in this series, so I think they will again. It'll be a close game. It will not be 5-1 like it was on Saturday.
No, and maybe this is a bold statement, and I guess we can get reaction. We're going to have EJ Raddick, by the way, on Wednesday. Couldn't do today. Get his opinion on what I'm going to say. It'll be post-mortem. But this, I think, is a huge, gargantuan game for Connor McDavid. You come into a Game 7... You're a favorite now with Besser being out, no Demko. You're coming off a 5-1 win at home. And this is a legacy game for him. It is. This is still a playoff sport to me. I know for you and I, we love the games. We watch the regular season and numbers and everything that gets you into the Hall of Fame and labels you as a great player. Most of it comes from the regular season, and what Connor McDavid has been able to accomplish in his career is almost second to none over the last 25 years, and he deserves his flowers. But it's still, at the end of the day, a playoff sport. And when you think of Wayne Gretzky, you think of that Game 7 in Toronto, you think about that natural hat trick in the third period with the Rangers against the Florida Panthers. There's moments that you think about with him not scoring 92 goals, but what did he do in the postseason? What did Mark Messier do in the postseason? What did Steve Yzerman do in the postseason? That's what everybody remembers. That's what makes you a forever player. And the Edmonton Oilers right now are in a position with a big Game 7 with a chance to advance to the conference final. I'm sorry. I need a big game from Connor McDavid. I do. And if he goes out there and scores 4 goals and they lose 7-6, well, I'm not going to get on him for it. But, if he doesn't do anything in this game and they lose 2-1, he's going to take a hit. I'm sorry. I just think that when you throw the accolades that we throw at him, and deservedly so, these are moments that are built for Connor McDavid to star. And I think he's got to be a star tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, he didn't score on Saturday, but he did have three assists. And the assist on the fourth goal was pretty unbelievable. I mean, he is, without a doubt, one of the best players on the ice on any given night for any time he's playing, especially in the playoffs. And Rick DiPietro was talking about it on DNR this morning. I was listening as I was driving in. And I think he explained it very well. It's just he's in fast forward while everybody else is at normal speed. And in RJ, beautifully, if you're a video game fan, and I know you were, Don, as much as I am now, it's like he's got turbo left and nobody else does. Like, everybody else is gassed, and Connor McDavid has found a way to find another gear. And he's going to need that tonight because you're in a hostile environment. Everyone talks about the first goal so important and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you want to be able to punch first. Vancouver is down their best goal scorer in this playoff. Now JT Miller is still more than capable, and Pettersson and Hughes and all the guys that they have. But if you can get Dreisaitl and McDavid to control this game on the onset, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be very nervous in a building where if things don't go well in Game 7s, Vancouver doesn't respond very well. And you can kind of silence that building if you get off to a good start. I'm looking forward to this game. It's going to be super exciting. ESPN has it. It's 9 o'clock, Don. You might actually be able to stay up for more than a period. That's big for you. So I'm really, really looking forward to what's in store tonight.
No, it's going to be an incredible atmosphere. And listen, if I'm a Canuck fan, as disappointed as I would be if they lost the game, it would kind of have a Nick feel to it. You know, for the people that aren't in New York, you know, the Knicks kind of came out of nowhere, had an amazing regular season, finished as a 2 seed, and probably, and deservedly so, should be playing in the conference final, but injury kind of caught up with them, and they ended up bowing out in 7 games, losing at home in Game 7, where there's almost literally nobody left on the court by the time the clock zeroed out. Kind of has that feeling in Vancouver, right, Anthony? I mean, this was not expected. They weren't expected to win their division. They weren't expected to have this kind of a year. And if they don't win tonight, you know, you lose your starting goaltender, you lose what has been your best forward in the postseason, but it's still a very young team. It's still a team that I think could be right back next year to make a run, where Edmonton, we've seen this story before. We've conference final 2 years ago, getting swept by Colorado, and, you know, last year bowing out in the second round, and now a chance to go back to the conference final. I think there's way more pressure on Edmonton to kind of feel like, all right, when is this going to finally happen for us? Where I think Vancouver has to feel like that they're with Rick Tocchet in the infancy of what could be, you know, a special few years moving forward. Yeah, and a built-in excuse if they do lose because of the injuries.
Of course, and it almost kind of has a Nick feel to it, right, Don? Where now Vancouver, I think, was a little stronger heading into the playoffs, and you thought that they could win the West, whereas the Knicks had more issues, and we'll get to that on a podcast that's not named a hockey podcast, Game is Conduct. But, you know, losing Demko, not having to Smith, having to go to your third-string goaltender to get as far as they did. And even then, I thought that Vancouver, even if healthy with Demko, because of the way that they kind of closed out the season, had a chance to lose to the Predators. And then I had Edmonton beating Nashville. So as much as I wouldn't have been surprised for them to go as far as they did, I did think that they had the ability to lose. And like you said, they have a lot of young talent on this team. JT Miller has turned out to be a star, and good for him. It's not the end, but you pointed it out last week. Almost everybody that was left, and this was when we still had 6-7 teams left, or 7-8 teams left, boy, what a disappointment X would be, or when are we going to get this for X? When are we going to get this for the Stars? When is it going to be time? Is this Boston's last gasp? Florida now going to play the Rangers on Wednesday. They made it to the Cup last year. Can they do it again? And how many chances you get? I don't think that Vancouver, if they don't get this, doesn't have a chance to make it back here. But as you said, there's built-in excuses. This team is not fully whole. It would be something for them to make it. I will say this. Regardless of who advances, I think it's Dallas's West to lose.
Yeah, I think so.
I felt that way before the playoffs started. I got nervous in Vegas. I never really was nervous in the Colorado series. I know that there were games where they didn't have it, but, I mean, they lost that game in overtime, Don. They never trailed. The only time they trailed was in that Game 5. And then the Matt Duchene goal in double overtime. I mean, everything was kind of clicking for them. They didn't get what they needed from their top guys. and guys like Matt Duchene end up scoring for them. I mean, Ryan Suter scored in this series for Dallas. So I think this is Dallas's to lose. I think they're extremely happy this is going seven. And I think that's a major advantage to them. And no matter who advances, they have the edge in goaltender, because I think Jake Oettinger is one of the best goalies in the league, and he's going to certainly be better than whoever Vancouver or Edmonton put out, unless Demko is healthy.
And I could be all wet on this, but with Demko and Besser being, you know, likely out, I think Edmonton's got the better chance of being competitive against Dallas. Although I think Dallas, I agree with you 100%. This is Dallas's conference to win. I had Dallas going, so I got that going for me. So the Panther Ranger, I think it's a coin flip, but I think Dallas is going to be a significant favorite over Vancouver or Edmonton. They'll have home ice, they're experienced, they were in a Stanley Cup final in the bubble. Tons of experience on both the defense and offensively, and I just think it's their time. So it's going to be very difficult to beat Dallas, but I think Edmonton might have the best chance.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
What did you think, Don, on Friday? We touched a little bit on the Stars double overtime win. What did you think of the Panthers-Bruins 2-1 late goal by Forsling? I mean, you know, just exactly who you'd expect in a Game 6. Boston played it tight, but in the end, I think Florida ends up just being too much for them. And that's kind of where we thought it was going to go anyway. Both you and I had Toronto beating Boston anyway. But this Panther team just seems like firing on all cylinders. Bobrovsky playing very well. I think the two best teams in the East are playing in the Eastern Conference Final.
It feels like that. What I've been spending a lot of time over the weekend, and we could probably break this down further with EJ on Wednesday, is the comparisons between Florida and Carolina. Now, on the surface, Carolina was the better team. They had, one more point, so it's not, you know, crazy. But, you know, they kind of were back and forth. But when doing this podcast, it felt like Florida spent the majority of the season as the best team in the NHL. They had a little bit of a slow start, and then they just caught fire. A lot of things that are very similar between these two teams, and that is exceptionally well coached. Rod Brind'Amour, and congratulations, he's staying in Carolina. Kind of surprised me. I thought he'd go to Seattle. So maybe that's an indication that he believes a lot of their free agents are going to come back. But he did sign a multi-year extension to stay in Carolina with the Hurricanes, so that's good for the Canes fans. But Paul Maurice is an amazing coach, good personality. I think he's
good for the game. That's fun.
I think it's going to be nice back and forth during the series. You're going to want to listen to the post-game press conferences with Paul Maurice. I'm going to have to talk to Ray Santiago, our producer for the Ranger games, that we might actually air the Paul Maurice stuff in the post-game, because I think it's going to be really good stuff.
Well, if you have an hour.
He's been around forever. I think he was 28 years old when he first got the Hartford Whaler job, and then hung around with taking Carolina to the Cup Final in 2002, had some good, you know, did some good years in Toronto, but nobody
ever
wins in
Toronto. Who replaced him again in Carolina, by the way?
Oh, that would be Peter Laviolette.
Oh, who does Peter Laviolette coach? Oh, the narratives keep going.
That. You know, and EJ told you last week how close he and Pete DeBoer are, so that could always be something if Dallas ends up playing Florida. But from a forward standpoint, I think the Panthers' forwards are better. I think that they're more dynamic. They've got a 50-goal scorer on there. And of course, what Tkachuk can bring and how much of a beast he was in last year's playoffs. And Verhaeghe, you hold your breath every time he has the puck, if any of these games go into overtime, because the guy is almost a savant the way that he can score in overtime. So I think the Panthers, what the Rangers are going to face is, I think, a deeper offensive team up front. The difference, I think, is that maybe Carolina was a tad bit deeper defensively, although there's no slouches here either. I mean, Ekblad is a stud, but maybe a little bit deeper defensively. But the big difference, a huge difference, is in goal. Now, Sergei Bobrovsky is, I think, a Hall of Fame goaltender. He kind of found himself late, kind of very pedestrian in Philadelphia and Columbus, and he's found himself in Florida. Guided them to the Stanley Cup Final last year, on the verge of doing it again this year. He was terrific in the Boston series. I thought he was a big difference, and Swayman played out of his mind. So I think that kind of balance things a little bit more to me watching that series, where I think the Panthers were the much better team, but I think Swayman just played so well that the games ended up being a lot more competitive than they could have been. So the Rangers obviously have to feel like they've got a great goaltender too. But different set of circumstances, but I think overall a better team the Rangers will face here in the third round than they did in Carolina in the second.
Yeah, no question, Don. It was interesting. I kind of took a look. We never got to it on the podcast, but obviously Peter Laviolette in Game 6 went with the different D pairs, went back to a D pair Ranger fans are very familiar with Trouba and Miller, them playing a majority of the minutes against the top guys and going to Gustafson and Schneider as the third pair. And I took a look, and it turned out I went on Natural Stat Trick, and you know, Don, you and me, while we understand some of these advanced stats, it's not something that we look at constantly. But I took a look in the three games they played this year, and of course they were very spread out, and one game was a blowout. But the Miller-Trouba pair actually was able to handle them pretty well, the Carolina Hurricanes, in the regular season. But they did end up having the most expected goals against in that Game 6, that pair. But Gustafson-Schneider, who probably played against lesser lines and didn't have the bulk of that really tough, those tough assignments, ended up having a goals against expected similar to Fox Miller. So I'm curious to see what Peter Laviolette does. I haven't taken a look at how these pairs matched up in the regular season. I do remember that it didn't matter who was on the ice in the game that I went to that you called, that they won in a shootout, that Florida, when they want to, can do whatever they want with the puck in the offensive zone. They're just that talented. The same way the Rangers can when their top two lines are going. So it'll be interesting. I wonder what Peter Laviolette will do. They have some questions in their lines because it looks like Wheeler might be good to go. Hedel says he's ready to go. Do they go back to Rempe? Because this is a series where there are a couple of guys that could definitely mix it up with this Ranger team. So do you start with that, or do you try to do that first? Does somebody else come out in an effort to try and get Blake Wheeler in, possibly as a fourth-line player? I don't know, Don. So it's going to be interesting.
I think the Wheeler thing is
a great story.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was done. But it just shows you the hockey player, right? We saw Sergachev come back in Tampa with a similar injury, and Wheeler comes back as well. I think it's a fabulous story. I just don't see where he fits. It wasn't like he was killing it when he was healthy anyway, no offense, but he didn't seem to work very well on that top line. I don't see how you make yourself better putting Blake Wheeler, who hasn't played in months, over Roslovic, who, even though he can be frustrating at times, does seem to have a bit of chemistry with Zibanejad and Kreider. So I don't know where there's a fit for Wheeler. I think you would be insane to not play Filip Hedl. He played great in those 12 minutes. Now, obviously, you have to watch and be careful, because could he play possibly and then experience issues after? But if he said he's good to go, Anthony, I got to play him.
I agree.
And I understand Matt Rempe might have a place in this series for sure, because there's a lot of instigators on that team. Tkachuk really loves to mix it up and get involved a lot. A lot of their guys like to do that. But I can't come at the expense of Hedl. So I don't know who else you would be thinking about taking out. I would think they would go back to having him play on that wing on the third line, and then moving Cooley to the fourth rotation. That seemed to work when they did it. They won the game in which they did it. I would think that's what they would do. And then if shenanigans happen, then maybe you feel like you got to dress Rempe in game two. I just can't play Matt Rempe over Filip Hedl if Hedl is healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Don. I think that Hedl showed in that game, what was it now, game three, that he had the ability and kind of got his legs under him relatively quickly. But the third period, he looked like he was up to pace with everybody else on that Carolina team, and that's a pretty fast Carolina team. And showing that he has the ability on that third line. Now, you take a look, another advanced stat. I think that the best line in the playoffs, Don, believe it or not, and this is the whole playoffs, in terms of expected goals for, is that third line with Wenberg, Cooley, and Kako. And they've only scored, I think, two regular even-strength goals. But you've seen it. I mean, Wenberg is a really good defensive forward. He also has the ability to shoot. He hasn't put the puck in. And boy, he changed sticks and everything. Like, he's feeling like he's snake bit a little bit. But Kako has played a really strong with this line. It seems like they... And Will Cooley kind of hits anything that moves. He's had a really nice rookie season. He doesn't look like a rookie out there at all. But even when they broke up that line and Cooley went down to the fourth line, it didn't really affect the juju and the mojo of the Ranger line. So if Hedl's good, you got to be able to play him.
Yeah.
I know Roslovic hasn't scored a lot, Don, but he seemed, I mean, he was instrumental in the game tire and the game winner in that game six, and his speed was something that they thought that they'd be able to exploit against Carolina. I think you could do it again against a Florida team that also has speed. And he's been a nice addition. So has Wennberg. They may not be as flashy as the, if you remember when Kopp came in and Vetrano came in a couple years ago, and they were the ones that were really carrying the offense. They're doing the little things well, which is also something that's important in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think the Rangers can be confident, no matter who they send out there, that their four lines, they could be able to rotate them pretty well. With Rempe, I don't know. Like you said, Don, can you really rely on, if you say that you trust him, can he only play 6 minutes? That's something I don't think you could do in a long series. And I think that you need to have confidence that you could roll everybody out, double shift Panarin when you need to, and have the confidence that you can go to anybody on that bench when they're called upon.
Now, you take a look at some of the stats. Penalty kill, 89% for the Rangers, 86% for the Panthers. That's Rangers were second, Panthers were third. Faceoffs were dead even at 51 apiece. Goals four, Rangers 3.50, Panthers 3.55. Rangers fourth, Panthers third. That's pretty dead even. Goals against, 2.60 for the Rangers, 2.45 for the Panthers. But the biggest difference is Rangers 31% on the power play to the Panthers 22%. So that seems to be a difference. But otherwise, it's pretty even. Both goaltenders spectacular. Both teams are laden with stars. There will be a little punch. Kachuk will get into it. Bennett, you saw what he did to Brad Marchand. Obviously, that's something that you have to keep in the back of your mind with the way that this Panther team plays. Cousins likes to mix it up as well. So they're a little bit more physical, certainly, than Carolina is. But as you said, if you're not going to trust him to play a ton of minutes and you're going to shut him down in the third period in a close game, you got to figure all these games are going to be close. I've got to think more on the line of who's going to get me a goal rather than who is going to be the protector. And I do think the Rangers can stand up for themselves. So I don't think that they're bereft of people that can, you know, mix it up. Barkley Goodrow can mix it up. Jacob Trouba can mix it up. So, hey, Rempe can be the ultimate, like Bennett's not going to try something. But I just don't think it's something that I'm going to have a guy that's going to play 4 or 5 minutes and be completely shut down in a tight game worthy of having that out there. So we'll see. You know, D'Angelo tried to stir it up in the games in which Rempe didn't play, right? And we saw some little back and forth, but nothing that the Rangers couldn't handle. Now, and if this Panther team, and the Carolina found it out too, but this Carolina Panther team is going to find out, if you mess with the Rangers and you commit penalties, they can burn you. All right, so
yep.
That ended up being a huge difference at the beginning of that series against Carolina. Washington had none chance because of their kill wasn't good enough. This Panther kill is still very good, but so was the Panthers. I mean, so were the Hurricanes. Hurricanes came in with the best kill, didn't stop the Rangers from going four for their first nine on the power play and taking that 3-0 series lead because of it. So if they want to mess around, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of it's the conference final now, so a lot of people are going to be looking at Bennett, looking at Kachuk. If they decide to call it close to the vest like they did in the beginning of the Carolina series, Panthers are going to get themselves in some penalty trouble, and the Rangers' penalty power play can make you pay. So if I'm the Rangers, I'm like, all right, bring it on. Let's see what you do. And if you end up in the box, we're gonna make you pay.
Yeah, and that's where it's going to have to be, Don. I mean, look, I don't think that this Rangers team is going to – I think over – since the All-Star break, 5-on-5 has gotten better when they've gotten their lines kind of situated and they've improved by getting Wennberg and Roslovic to kind of round out the top nine. I think Hedl could obviously improve that. I don't think that you're going to see a marketably better 5-on-5 team than you have all season, and that's not to say that that's bad. It just means this is kind of what this team is. They're going to rely on their special teams. Now, the thing that you have to worry about with Florida is they have a great power play as well. I know the penalty kill was great for the Rangers in the Carolina series, but as you saw, when Carolina started to get going on that power play in those last couple games, it ended up hurting the Rangers. So you really want to make sure, if you're the Rangers, you want to stay out of the box, but you also want to try and make sure that you get your opportunities and bank them in, because 5-on-5, Florida could take over a game, whereas I think the Rangers need to work a little harder to do that. One thing, Don, that you mentioned, and I think is really important, We were talking about Carolina, last chance saloon, so many guys that are unrestricted free agents, some restricted free agents. No, I don't want to say no way you could pay all those guys, but I'm going to find it hard to believe that every single person on that team is going to come back without getting a raise. And if they're all due for raises, some guys are not going to be able to make it back. I will say this. If I'm a Carolina Hurricane fan, I am thrilled that the first order of business was extending Rod Brindamore. Because I think that the way that he coaches and his style, and it seems like everybody on that team has bought in, if you went with almost changing half of your roster and getting a new coach, I think Carolina was in danger of falling into the abyss of the Metro for a couple of years. I think with Rod Brindamore, no matter who they bring back and who they bring in, I think that they're going to be a hard team to play. I think they have enough young talent that's under contract that they're going to at least make it annoying for teams in the Metro, and they still have a chance to make the playoffs. Maybe they're not going to be the second best team in the Metro, but I think keeping Rod Brindamore was a huge, huge win for Carolina.
And it makes you think, hey, he had options. It looked like everybody thought, myself included, he was going to go to Seattle. He didn't. So is that a disrespect to Seattle? Or is it, hey, I think they're going to still keep a lot of these players here and we're still going to have a legitimate chance at winning this thing? If you think the latter, then you got to just be thrilled that he's going to be sticking around here. I thought he was going to be gone, but the fact that he's going to be back is pretty huge. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick, hashtag game misconduct. Velvet Room Inmate. That's a lot deep there. Hello, Don and Anthony. Everyone says, if our team doesn't win the cup, our season is a failure. Of the teams that are remaining, if they don't, who would you say it applies to, if at all? I probably would lean towards if at all, just because I don't know if any of these teams can really dub their year a failure. First of all, leave Vancouver out of it. Could Edmonton consider it a failure? I don't know how much they were thinking about going to the conference final when they
oh no, with that losing streak coach, they went on, I can't imagine. They should be lucky they're here. Just be happy they're here.
No, that's a real interesting one. The Rangers, I guess people will, because they won the President's Trophy, but they're probably going to be an underdog against Florida. And if they did win that series, I wouldn't be surprised if they were an underdog against Dallas. So let's leave the Rangers up there. Dallas. I mean, they won their conference. They won a really difficult division. They've been banging on the door the last few years. I could see them thinking it was a failure in Dallas.
Rangers are dogs, by the way, plus 125 on ESPN Bet.
And as far as Florida, well, they did prove last year wasn't a fluke. So would they consider it a failure? Did they go into the season saying, now we got to go out and win it? You know, maybe. And you talk about, they've got a ton of free agents as well.
I could see Florida as being that team feeling like, you know, they made the push last year. No one expected it. Now there's expectations. And they're in the Eastern Conference final.
Kulikov, Ekman-Larsson, Montour, Lomberg, Stenlin, Lawrence, Cousins,
and you take a look at those Tampa teams, Don.
Reinhardt.
A lot of the top six on those Tampa teams stood together. What was the difference, and why did it make it so hard for them to keep going back? The reason was because they lost the Goudreaus of the world,
right.
And they lost who went to Seattle. I'm trying to think now. Yanni Gourde went to Seattle. Like, you lose those guys, and you wonder to yourself, well, they still have those top six. Yeah, well, you know what? It's those third and fourth line guys that you can rely on to plug up minutes against those top six of other teams, and the defensemen that you can rely on when your top guys are playing 30 minutes, and who's going to get the other 10 to 15 that you need to make sure that you keep that one-goal lead or two-goal lead. And when you lose those guys, it's harder to find the pieces to fit back together again, and it could take you a couple of years to find that. So, you know, you won your division. You were one of the best teams all year. Yes, you're playing the President's Trophy Rangers, and both teams can have that debate of whether it's a failure if they don't make it to the Cup. But boy, oh boy, if you lose, some people could say you're going backwards. I wouldn't think of it that way. I think Florida is very good. But, yeah, I could see people thinking Florida would be a failure if they don't win.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you got to talk to their fan base, got to talk to their media. But it's interesting. The one team I'll exclude is Vancouver. But everybody else, I guess, can say that maybe it would be a a disappointment if they didn't win. Duncan says, how would you rank the performances of the goalies for the three teams currently in the third round? Do you think any goalie will have a chance at the Conn Smythe this year if their team wins the cup? For sure. I mean, Bobrovsky would be a candidate right now. I think Shesterkin would certainly be a candidate right now. Ottinger, I get all goaltenders always get consideration because the you can't get this far without your goaltender having some sort of play. But listen, we've watched all of Igor's games, and I think he would definitely be a candidate. Like, who is the MVP of the Rangers? Is it Panarin? Is it Kreider? Is it Shesterkin? I would probably say Shesterkin just because he's been the one constant throughout all of this, the way he's performed throughout the postseason. Florida, I mean, there's a lot of guys you can mention with the Panthers too, but Bobrovsky, I think, has been a huge difference maker. So those are the two that jump to mind to me. Anthony would be Shesterkin and Bobrovsky, and ironically, one of them is going to play in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I mean, again, going back to advanced stats, I like Money Puck. They kind of break it down really easy. Goals save above expected in these playoffs. Jeremy Swayman led the way, 13.3 goals save above expected, which is insane. Igor second with 8.8, Ottinger 5.2, and then Bobrovsky's down at 8th with 2.6. Now, I say that with the guys that are in between those guys, from Ottinger to Bobrovsky, Logan Thompson, Joseph Woll, UC Saros, Nathan Hill. Not exactly guys that have played as many games as Swayman, Shesterkin, Ottinger, and Bobrovsky. So you're looking at the three best goaltenders left in the playoffs based on goals save above expected. I think that matters. If I had to rank them, I'd probably... I don't know if I'd rank it that way, to be honest with you. I'd probably actually go Igor, Bob, and then Ottinger, even though I do like Ottinger. I think that there are some games, but again, Colorado can make you look that way, which is pretty insane. But I think if you got to feel good about all three of those teams, the way your goaltender's playing heading into the next round. But if you asked me to rank them, just because I've seen every game of Shesterkin, I would have to go Igor, then I would go Bob, then I would go Ottinger.
Listen, I hate to get that deep into the weeds with the analytics, but you can't fault the goaltender if he doesn't see an unsavable shot.
Right,
just means that he's got really good defensemen in front of him, and Swayman is up there because let's face it, they took on two high-powered offensive teams that were going to get huge opportunities. The Rangers, Washington was not a great offensive team, did not get a lot of shots on goal. Carolina better, but I wouldn't put them up there with the Torontos and the Floridas the way Boston had to deal with it. And Dallas, the same thing. I mean, they had to go up against a really good offensive team in Colorado. So saves above expected, that's going to be that your guys in front of you are allowing quality opportunities. So I don't look too deep into that. You let my eyes tell the story. And, Swayman was great because the ice was tilted for most of the series. And the only reason it went six and the games were competitive late was because of Swayman. So that's the difference there. Mark says, do you have a sleeper pick for the series? Do you have a sleeper pick in this series for the Rangers who might have an impact no one saw coming? Mine is Cooley, young but someone who hits, has bite, and also some sneaky good offensive skill under the surface. Seems like a matchup that might suit what he can bring. Again, that's going to depend on where he's going to play. If he stays on that third rotation, then I agree with Mark, because as you said, that has been the most effective line analytically. But if he moves on a fourth line, it might be difficult for him to have that kind of an impact. If he's playing with VC and Gaudreau, it's going to be more of a defensive mentality than an offensive one, as opposed to playing with Wayman and Kako. So I need to see where Cooley's going to be. As far as anybody else, I mean...
I don't think that here. You know what I'll say, Adam Fox, and here's why I say that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You know what, Don? We're just sync. It's beautiful. The reason I say that is this: I think that if you are a fan of this Ranger team and you've watched them play, the way that these two series have gone, almost everybody has contributed. The fourth line was the main reason for the game one win against Washington. The third line, everybody seems to think, has been their best overall line 5-on-5, and they're just due to score a goal. And we already know what Trocheck, Zibanejad, Kreider, Panarin, Lafreniere, and even Roslovic have brought to the table. No one's going to catch you by surprise. I think it's very obvious that after game four against Washington, Adam Fox has not been the same player. He certainly wouldn't admit it. Laviolette won't say it. But I think that obviously whatever was going on with that knee, he was one of the only guys not participating in the skate yesterday. Obviously, I believe he's compromised. And one of the things that you did notice, yes, he was effective on the power play, but you didn't notice the Adam Fox shooting from the point as much in that Carolina series, which what makes him so good when he's out there with whichever line they put him out there with. So if you want to talk about a guy who I think is going to be under the radar, I think Adam Fox hasn't had the playoff he's wanted because of the injury to his knee or whatever happened to his knee. And I think that you're going to see with the rest a much better Adam Fox on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's going to be a big deal for sure. And I hopefully that extra bit of rest is going to help him tremendously. This is going to be a terrific series. Both teams are well rested. Both teams seem to be as healthy, I guess, as you can be this late in the whole thing. Rangers, apparently there might have been a bug going through the team late in the series against Carolina. You got to figure that should be out of their system by Wednesday, so that'll get going on Wednesday. And then Dallas waits for the winner of Edmonton and Vancouver. That'll be determined either tonight or early tomorrow morning. Face-off set for 9 o'clock Eastern time, which makes sense, right? It's not too late here on the East, but you want the people out West to be able to get it in prime time or at least close to it. So fans of Vancouver will get a 6 o'clock face-off. The fans in Edmonton will get a 7 o'clock face-off, and we will see who's going to take on the Dallas Stars. So by the time we get to Wednesday, it'll all be set, and we'll get you ready for Game 1 between the Rangers and the Panthers, and it should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned. Pay attention to us at Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct, expecting to have EJ on Wednesday and get his thoughts on the Final Four. So let's do this again on Wednesday.
Let's do it, Don.
All right, we'll talk to you again then. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.